Wednesday will be Independence Day. It seems fitting that we at least take just a moment this morning and reflect on what has happened to make it possible for us to enjoy the freedoms that we enjoy. Although we have many problems in our nation, we need to appreciate the opportunities that we have, particularly the opportunity to come together in a setting like this and worship God. Perhaps we take this for granted. We could lose it. Some people in the world today do not have it. And it seems appropriate for us to at least stop for just a moment and pause and think about the blessings that we have that are associated with our freedoms. Some of you may be out of town Wednesday. For those of you that are in town, Judy and I'd like to invite you to join us with a brown bag meal Wednesday night at 6. We haven't had one of these in a while. For those of you who are not familiar with that, that means you bring what you want to eat. You bring what you want to drink. Judy and I supply the napkins. But let's meet at 6 o'clock, those of us that are in town, and get together for a few minutes and enjoy the fellowship one with another, and maybe take time to have a prayer together concerning the freedoms that we enjoy. The word that is emphasized in our lesson this morning is not a word that you will find as such in the Bible. I'm talking about the word feelings in the plural. You and I use it. Someone might say you have to be careful what you say to that person because he wears his feelings on his sleeve. That means that he's easily upset. Maybe he can get angry easily or at least have problems along that line very easily. Occasionally you'll hear a statement something like this: he's not coming to church here anymore, he got his feelings hurt. All of us have feelings. Some more than others. Some have a conscience seared as with a hot iron and seemingly cannot experience feelings like others. But all of us have feelings because that word really describes a state of mind. I would guess that all of us from time to time need to change our feelings. If we're honest with ourselves, that we will determine that we may have some problems with the way we feel. I had an opportunity a few weeks ago to hear a man speak who is a gospel preacher, but who is also a therapist in the area of psychology. I think his title is psychotherapist. He works for a hospital in Middle Tennessee, as well as preaches the gospel. Just so happened that on this occasion, he was talking about the subject of feelings. And he's in an area of work where I would consider him to be somewhat of an expert on the subject. As I listened to him, he stirred my thinking, caused me to do some research and some study and develop the lesson that I'm presenting to you this morning on the subject of changing our feelings. The text that was read by Kenny a few minutes ago includes the word feeling in the singular and includes it in a way that it seems to be talking about the subject that is before us this morning. The one thing that this man said the other day when I was listening to him that really caught my attention was this: the Bible doesn't have as much to say about changing our feelings as it does changing our thinking. He went ahead to explain that. Talk about how that if we're going to change our feelings, we're going to have to change our thinking. But that's really where the change needed to take place. And I believe when we're through analyzing this passage here in Ephesians 4 that we will have to agree with that conclusion. Notice in the first place that we do need to change our feelings. There's an indication in verse 17 here that these folks had been walking in an attitude that is described as the vanity of their mind. I believe the version that Ken read from said the futility of their mind. They had been living in vain. What they were doing was in vain. Their attitude seems to have been in vain. He says it was the vanity of their mind. So it has to do with attitude and with what we might refer to as feelings. In the 19th verse, he accuses them of being past feelings or past feeling, suggesting that their feelings couldn't really be touched, their conscience could not be touched as it ought to be. He said they are past feeling. Remember that Paul discussed this with Timothy when he said that people would get to this point, having their conscience seared as with a hot iron, and they really cannot be touched with the infirmities of others and the feelings of others very much. Their feelings are vain, and they're past feeling. I think I have met some people that came pretty close to that. They could not shed a tear when someone else was hurting. They could not take the time to express sympathy or empathy to anyone who was hurting in any way. And even in some instances, there are those who seemingly cannot be touched if a child is hurting. And that's one of the most unusual set of circumstances, because most of us are touched by a child, especially when that child is hurting, if we're ever touched by anything. But there are a few people, at least, who seemingly are past feeling. They can abuse a child. They can take a cigarette, for example, and stick it to a little baby's body and burn that little baby, or break bones of that little baby, and seemingly the conscience is not touched. The conscience is not stirred. They are past feeling, he says here about these folks. In verse 23, he goes to the other side of it and says that what is needed is a renewal in the spirit of your mind. I believe that verse is saying that there is a need for people to change their feelings. There's to be a renewed interest in using our feelings in the right way. He says a renewal in the spirit of the mind. And that comes as close as anything in this in talking about changing our feelings. In Romans 12, 1 and 2, Paul touches this just a bit. He said, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Notice verse 2. Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. So there is in this passage a description, at least in general terms, of the feelings of these folks. He even says that they were living in such a way in times past that he calls it vanity of mind, and he said they had come to the point that they were past feeling. They couldn't be touched with their feelings. It'd be just the opposite of the one who wears his feelings on his sleeves and the least little thing will trigger them. The opposite of that is that you cannot touch the person as far as his feelings are concerned. But at least these passages emphasize to us that there is a need to change our feelings, especially if there is vain thinking or we're to the point that we are somewhat past feeling and cannot be touched with the needs of others and the needs of the work of the Lord. How are we going to do that? Do we just turn on our feelings and shut them off at will? Not necessarily. There has never been a time, in my opinion, that more people are having trouble controlling their feelings than right now. There are more people who are seeking medical help in the area of emotions than probably any time in the history of our country. And sometimes even those who are Christian people have difficulty controlling their feelings and sometimes need professional help. I'm thankful that we have overcome some of the stigma attached to seeking help in this area of life. And most people now realize that sometimes there are some medical problems associated with this, and even if not, that it is still an illness that needs to be treated, and there needs to be concern about that. I'm thankful for the progress that we have made, But again, I would suggest to you that there are more people who are having trouble with their emotional state of mind than probably in the history of this nation at any time that you and I have seen. And so that just emphasizes the fact that we need to change our feelings many times. But how do we do that? I believe this passage points out that in order to change our feelings, sometimes we have to change our actions. We're not as ready to do that many times, and maybe that's not as easy as we would like. But look at this passage from the standpoint of actions for just a moment. Back to verse 17, their walk was a vain walk. He talks about walking. That's action. That's a way of life. And he said that they were not to henceforth they were not to walk as the Gentiles did, as they had previously walked, that was a vain walk. Their actions were not what they ought to be. In verse 18, he indicates that the type of life being lived by these folks is one where they were alienated from God. That means separated from, away from. They were not walking in godliness. They were not living godly lives. They were alienated from God. Verse 22 uses the word corrupt. The word conversation is used in the King James Version. That means conduct, so translated in others. He said you need to put off concerning the former conduct of the old man, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lust. Boy, that verse is full of negative things, isn't it? He said your conduct has been corrupt. It is full of deceit. It is full of lust. You haven't been living like you should. And you need to make some changes. And then in verse 24, he goes to the opposite side of this and says that there needs to be the new man, and that this new man is one who is to live in righteousness and holiness. There's a contrast, really, between two lifestyles in this passage. Living in vain, in lust, in corruptness, or living in righteousness and holiness. And he accuses them in verse 19 of having gone so far into the lustful kind of living that they were involved in lasciviousness or lewdness to this extent, notice this, to work all uncleanness with greediness. No wonder they were past feeling. No wonder it would have been difficult to stir their feelings or their emotions in the direction of somebody else. They were living in a life that not only is described as lewd and lascivious, but he says they were greedy toward uncleanness. They were constantly seeking uncleanness. How can a person have his feelings under control and live that kind of life? 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 11 describes 10 different types of sin. And then he says, but such were some of you. You've been washed, you've been sanctified, you've been justified. Notice the change that takes place there. They were involved in idolatry and fornication, adultery, drunkenness, covetousness. You know the rest of the ones that are there. He said, that's the way you were, but you have been washed and sanctified, set apart, justified, forgiven. There's been a drastic change in your lives, Paul was saying. They were changing their actions. They were changing their way of life. And because of that, their feelings necessarily would have changed. Many times we are depressed, disappointed, dissatisfied with what's happening in life. Maybe we do not have the self-esteem or the self-respect that we ought to have. We do not feel good about ourselves, as well as a problem of not feeling right toward other people. How are we going to change those feelings? We've got to change our actions. Galatians 6, 3 and 4, he said, if a man thinks himself to be something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. Notice the answer, but let a man prove his own work. Then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. Could it be that the reason that we do not have joy in our lives and we do not rejoice each day and feel good about our lives each day is that we're not doing very much in the Lord's service? Let a man prove his own work, and then he'll have rejoicing in himself. Is that not saying that the answer to the need for self-esteem and self-respect comes in getting busy in the Lord's work and serving others and doing good to others? And then we'll have our feelings under control if we get our actions under control. So one of the factors involved in changing our feelings is changing our actions. How in the world can we feel good about ourselves and others if we're living in the mire of sin? Or if we're living in a neglectful attitude toward our families, toward the church, toward the community? How can we have our feelings under control if we don't have our actions under control? But I believe there is something that is one step deeper than this. Change your feelings, change your actions, but the real answer is change your thinking. Change your thoughts. Notice verse 18. Having the understanding darkened. Having their understanding darkened. No wonder they had problems with their feelings and with their actions, because they had problems with their understanding. He says their understanding was darkened, and he goes ahead and uses the word ignorance and the word blindness in connection with the heart. He says it's through the ignorance that is in them because of the blindness of their hearts. These folks have got problems with their thinking process. They don't understand because they're blind. You remember Jesus said in Matthew 15:13-15, that there were those who had closed their eyes and their ears and their hearts and wouldn't listen. These are not unlike that. He said their understanding is darkened because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their hearts. They had trouble with their thinking. The lasciviousness of verse 19 and the greediness of verse 19 suggests that they were having trouble with their thinking. Evidently, these folks were thinking so much about lascivious things that they didn't have time to think about other things. And you know, it's possible for one to fill his mind so much with evil things that there's not room for the good. To fill his mind with the ugly things that there's not room for that which is beautiful and pretty. That seems to have been the problem here. But notice verses 20 and 21, which gives us the answer. He said, you haven't learned Christ like this. If you're going to live like this, you've not learned Christ. Because if you've learned Christ, he said, if you have heard and have been taught, wouldn't that be dealing with one's thinking process? If you have heard and been taught of him as truth is in Jesus, we've got to get our thinking right before we can get our feelings right. The Bible doesn't say as much about changing feelings as it does changing our thoughts. Proverbs is full of this. 4:23, keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Proverbs 16:9, a man's heart plans his way or his ways. 23:7, as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. How are we going to get our feelings changed? As he thinketh in his heart, we've got to change our thoughts. And so it just seems to be a simple process that is explained here. That in order to change our feelings to where they're not so easily hurt, we don't wear them on our sleeves, we have the right attitude toward other people, toward ourselves, is we've got to change our thinking, which in turn will change our actions toward other people. I think Elijah is a classic example of what is before us this morning. If you were to read the 17th, 18th, and 19th chapters of 1 Kings, you would find Elijah being able to overcome the prophets of Baal, something that should have caused him to certainly have his feelings under control toward God. But shortly after that, you find Jezebel sending him word she's going to kill him. Elijah has some trouble with his feelings. He becomes discouraged. And I suppose if anything would discourage you, it would be Jezebel. But he has some trouble with his feelings, and so he turns and he begins to run, and he runs away from his responsibilities. Not only that, but particularly in the 19th chapter of 1 Kings, you'll find him saying, "Let me die. I don't want to live anymore. I'm the only one left. Now, he was having trouble with his feelings. If there's ever a case in the Bible of somebody who was discouraged, and I think we could even go to the point of saying was depressed, it was Elijah. He needed to do something about his feelings, but what did God tell him when God came and talked to him? He said, Elijah, you've got to change your actions and you've got to change your thinking. You need to get up from here and get back there and do my work. I've still got thousands that haven't bowed their knee to Baal. You've got to get your thinking straight, Elijah. I think God was saying to him in all this conversation, Elijah, you need to stop and put God first. Look at what's happened. Look how God has been with you. And now you're letting a message from one woman turn you around and turn you away and get you to where you're depressed. He says, Elijah, you've got to get your thinking right. And realize that God is still in control. And that there are still people who are hungry for the truth and can be brought to the truth. If you'll get up and get your thinking right and your actions right and get back there and do the Lord's will. I think God was saying to Elijah, the way to get your feelings under control is to get your thinking under control. And folks, it'll work for us today. It's easy sometimes to become discouraged. It's easy to even become depressed. But we need to change our thinking. We need to realize that God is still in his heaven. Not all is right with the world, but God is still in his heaven and he's still in control. We ought not to forget that verse that says, seek him first. Neither should we forget the promises associated with that, that we'll have our needs met if we will seek him first. If we will get our thinking straight, and then our actions straight, it'll be easier to get our feelings under control. Yes, I think it is true. The best way to change our feelings is to change our thinking. And if you'll get your thinking in the right place this morning, I think you'll want to be a Christian and to live for God. Whatever else happens around you, you'll want to be a Christian and live for him. And you can have the trust in him. You can get your feelings right toward him, toward yourself and toward others. If you'll get your thinking right toward God, Christ, heaven, and the Word of God. And when we get our thinking right, we're going to want to be Christians. You're not a Christian if you'll stop and really think about it this morning. I think you'll want to be. You're not a faithful Christian if you'll get your thinking right, you'll want to be. Think about it seriously. Do you need to be baptized into Christ? Do you need to come for prayers? Think about it. And let it lead you to act as together we stand and sing.